It's Wednesday at 10 a.m., and that can only mean time for the Kenai Conversation. And since it is semi-irregular since the last time we did this, we are right on schedule for having another sports show. And I've got the men with notepads here with me from the Clarion, Joey Klecka and Jeff Hilminiak. How are you guys doing today? You're doing well. Why can't I hear you? Somebody's been screwing with my microphones in here. Is that thing plugged all the way in over there, Jeff? Can you say
yeah,
something?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. How about you, Joey?
Hello.
Well, that's disappointing. There we are. I bet I can hear
you
now.
Hello. There we go. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Sounds like I can hear myself.
Yeah. Well, here we are. It's December 12th, and we have a lot of sports, despite the fact that it being in the middle of winter. We've got the baseball winter meetings going on right now, and there have been quite a bit of movement amongst our favorite teams. There's also NFL. I want to talk to you guys about your pigskin pick'em here in a bit, too.
Bear down.
What's that?
Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
How about them?
I haven't been following them. I don't know how they're doing.
They're on the cusp. Oh, come on.
On the cusp of
winning in the division?
Are they really? Well, yeah, Green Bay is 5-9-1,
if they beat
five,
the Packers this weekend.
5-9-1, right? Or 5-7-1?
They got like
seven,
the same
one?
Record as the Browns, I think.
It's yeah. Not good.
All right, well, now that we've got things settled here, Joey Klecka and Jeff Hilminiak from the Clarion. First, let me ask you guys, what's going on locally? We should probably clue some folks in on that. I understand there's wintertime bike races going on and what have you.
There's a ton of stuff going on locally right now. I mean, because everyone's trying to fit a bunch of stuff in before the holiday season comes on. So, like, this week... All the basketball teams pretty much start in earnest. So there's tournaments at Soldotna, Kenai Central, and Cook Inlet Academy. And then Homer and Seward are also playing at a tournament up in Seward. So it's basically wall-to-wall basketball. The Juno Douglas hockey team is coming to town for games Wednesday through Saturday, two against Kenai Central and two against Soldotna. Maybe skiing. I mean, there's supposed to be a ski meet on... Friday called the Candy Cane Scramble. It was looking pretty dubious that would happen, but right. that situation may be changing by the moment. I don't know. We'll see if this is enough snow.
Oh.
And then wrestling. I mean, state tournament this weekend at the Alaska Airlines Center, which is apparently cleaned up after the big earthquake. Obviously, the floor was flooded.
Oh, was it? Oh.
Yeah. It was, so there was some question about whether they could have that there. And that's a great event because in the last few years they've been able to put the small schools and the big schools under one roof, which is something they hadn't been able to do for a number of years. So you get a big crowd there. You know, there's the wrestling and so many passionate supporters that it's a really great event. And I think that's obviously the most important thing going on. It shouldn't get short shrift because everything else is going on. I think that's number one, what's going on. And you've got Homer, which is has been one of the best small schools teams for like 4 years running now.
Right, they just won their division again, right?
Yeah, they just won their conference again. And then there's a number of other wrestlers from the area who can compete for state titles. So yeah, that's basically what's going on with sports.
Oh man, you know, I had on the air here I don't know, a month ago or so, a girl from the Kenai High School ski team.
Uh-huh.
And the thing was, she was from Lebanon. And so she had seen snow. You know, there are mountains there, and you can see snow. But, you know, skiing isn't, like, really big in the Middle East.
Really? I want to guess that.
They bring in, like, it seems like once a year, Kenai and some of the other schools, they bring in at least one. I always hear about the ski teams. They always get one kid that's, like, Lebanon. Or I think last year they had a girl from Egypt. So,
yeah,
that's a trend.
Yeah, a girl from Egypt, and then there was a guy from Jordan.
Yeah.
Also. And so I'm thinking, you know, if she's any good, she could become the Lebanese ski team in the Olympics.
She can qualify to the Olympics, yeah.
I mean, that's actually an interesting story. Are you aware that there's a guy who graduated from Soldotna High School kind of specializes in taking skiers from countries that aren't classic snow countries and putting them in the Olympics. He's done it at the last two Olympics. His name's Andy Liebner.
Yeah, you know, I either interviewed him or the guy he trained for the last Winter Olympics for something.
Oh, okay, the guy from Mexico, Madrazo.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was real famous for kind of getting carried off the course after the...
after he came in last or something in the 400 or the 800 or something.
Yeah, I mean, it was a 10-kilometer, the 12.5-kilometer freestyle. Because that's the race where basically everyone can race in it.
Oh.
Like all the Olympic races, they don't have, like, it's open to, like, everyone who qualifies.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one race that they do. And that's the one that he was able to race in.
I mean, could we do it?
You're from the United States, so you won't have a chance. But there's actually qualifying standards for no matter what country you're from. So like he had to actually make like qualifying standards.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like this person from Lebanon could just ski in the Olympics because they're the only person from Lebanon skiing. You'd still have to meet certain standards.
Right.
But so he specializes in taking people who have never been on snow before and getting them to meet these standards within like a year or so.
Bringing them a long way.
Man. You know what else I saw? I don't know which one of you wrote it, or maybe it was a Wire story, but there's a new fella from the peninsula here who's making some noise in international biathlon.
Yeah, Travis Cooper.
Oh, yeah. I remember doing stories about Jay Hockenin 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, he's... I mean, obviously, he's with the National Guard program. He's also on the U.S. Biathlon National Development Team. And he had really good qualifying races in Soldier Hollow. I think it was in late October and early November. So he qualified to be on the World Cup. So obviously, his first races, he was like 103rd out of like 106 or whatever. But, that's your first race on the World Cup. All of a sudden, you're warming up next to Olympians. So it's a little intimidating. So we'll see how he does. I mean, biathlon's a very interesting sport. I'm sure as people who follow Jay Hakkinen closely realized, you know, skiing is as aerobically challenging as it gets, as I'm sure anyone who's tried it from around here knows. But then you can just imagine after going up a hill, you have to do the fine motor control of shooting at a target. And that'd be virtually, I think, impossible for most people.
We're mere mortals.
Yeah. And, this is a thing where if you miss one out of, like, 20, you're probably not going to win. And we're talking a matter of, like, centimeters.
Right.
Like, if you remember Hakkinen, and I think it was Olympics in Utah, he would have won a medal. But, like, what happens to bullets when they hit the target is sometimes they split. And his happened to split in the wrong direction, so the target didn't go down.
Oh.
And that was the difference between him making, I believe it was a bronze medal and not medaling at all. And his bullet split in the wrong direction.
Huh.
So you can imagine that you're skiing up these hills, you know, with these world-class skiers trying to keep up with them. And then all of a sudden, that's the difference between, you know, his goal in life was to get an Olympic medal. Like he trained, I mean, like he was in, you know, trained for 20 years for this.
Yeah.
And that's the difference is a bullet splitting. So that's the type of sport we're talking about. So hopefully Travis Cooper will do well and stay on the scene, and you know people can enjoy following that sport again. It's super popular in Europe.
Oh yeah. You've obviously probably talked to these guys more than I have, but do they think it's more shooting or more skiing? Like, can you teach somebody who skis how to shoot, or can you teach somebody who shoots how to ski?
I would say, I mean, one thing with Hakkinen was always, you know, that he was a top level skier. Like, he was a really good skier, and I would say that the simple answer is both. I mean, it takes both. Like, you have to have a certain amount of ski speed to be able to excel. Like, if you're shooting perfect every time and still finishing, like, third or finishing fifth, say, you're never gonna – there's no way for you to improve. But if you're, like, a great skier – but you can't control your heart rate, and you're always missing, like, say, three targets every race, you're never going to win either. So, I mean, that's what I think makes the sport so fascinating.
Yeah.
Is that you have to be a master of two different disciplines, and they're two totally different things.
I don't want to take anything else from away from regular cross-country skiers, but, I mean, if they were fast enough to win medals without shooting things, that's what they'd be doing, right? I mean, these guys who are in the biathlon?
I would say probably yes. Like, you'll see, like, in the summer in the roller ski series, these guys will get in races, and the biathletes will get in races, and they won't win them going against the normal skiers, but they'll be competitive. I remember when Jay Häkkinen was kind of at his peak. It was in that Utah Olympics. He kind of made a cross comment like, you know, maybe now that they see me ski, they would have like they'll realize that they're wrong in not letting me compete for the normal team, like maybe get on a relay. Like, that has happened, like in the World Cup skiing circuit, every once in a while a biathlete will show up from like one some country, and they'll compete in an actual World Cup race and do okay, you know, like in the sprint races, you go through a number of heats and you go through like quarterfinals, semifinals, they will actually, you know, get into the semifinals or something,
right?
So they're really good skiers.
Yeah, they're not chumps out there.
No, they're not chumps. They're not at that like level where you're meddling at skiing. But they also have this other discipline that's extremely hard. Like, to give you an idea, I think his name's Matt Emmons, the guy who went to UAF who's meddled in shooting. Like, he was actually mentoring the U.S. biathlon program last year. Like, they're learning, like, high-level, like, Olympic-level shooting, but they're also, like, nearing Olympic level at skiing. And it's not like these two disciplines like build on each other, are complementary. It's not like they're cross-country skiing and biking.
Right.
They're cross-country skiing and shooting.
You know what I'd like to see is, you know, in Nordic races in the Olympics, you know, there's the cross-country skiing, there's the biathlon. But skate jumping is also a Nordic sport. And
Nordic combined? Or just the jumping by itself?
Just the jumping. But,
oh, okay.
You know, they do have guys who cross-country ski and then jump.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's what I was talking about.
It's, I'd like to see ski jumping and biathlon together. You know, maybe...
Hit a target while you're flying through the air, is that what you're saying?
Either that or, you know, once you land safely, okay. Then you get to shoot something.
I mean, I think you'd have to make sure you had the safety on at all times. That's a pretty jarring landing if you didn't have the safety on.
Maybe skeet from the ski jump. You get over, you yell pole right when you're off the... Though that could really add to the agony of defeat.
Yeah. Bring a lot more eyes to the sport, too.
I think I'd safely watch that sport from television. I don't think I'd want to actually be at the event.
Man. You ever watch things like the X Games on TV?
I'm not a big X Games fan, but I've watched it.
Yeah, they had like last winter. I watched a lot of it, and it was especially like not the traditional ski jumping, but the aerial jumping. You know, they got like one big bump down this hill. You know, and they both do snowboard and skis with it. And they use a big boom camera, like these microphones, and they're like right behind these people as they go off the jump. And it's just, it's must be way better than being there in person, just watching it like
being
that.
Being the camera operator.
Yeah. Or, you know, just the view. Wow. I don't know.
I mean, that's the overall concern in sports these days, right? It's getting better to sit in front of the television than to show up to an event live.
Before we get off the ski subject, I just want to mention, I just saw this morning after I woke up, so this is like brand new news. Petter Northug Jr. retired from professional competition. He's known as, you know, like just this awesome cross-country skier. Or, you know, he was like, you know, maybe 9 or 10 years ago from Norway. So I just want to point that out. He was really, really super fun to watch. Really got people to, I mean, the way he raced, he made people change their strategy, other racers, because he just had such an incredible kick at the end of these races. They had to change the strategy around him to beat him. So just saw he retired this morning from professional racing.
Wow. Speaking of racing, kudos on the vintage Jeff Gordon Rainbow Warrior t-shirt. I like
it's
it.
Great.
You remember during the height of his fame, you know, his car was as famous as he was. Yeah,
the Rainbow Warriors.
Yeah. They did a special paint job on it one time. It was at what's one of the nighttime short tracks? Darlington?
No, Bristol, maybe.
Bristol, somewhere. But it changed colors under the light as it went around the track.
The Chrome Illusion car. That was might it? Have been yeah. that might have been the boy, I'm trying. I know what car that is. I'm trying to remember what race that was. I think it was Charlotte. I seem to remember.
Oh, I thought it was a smaller track.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Charlotte Motor Speedway. They were at, might have been like the All Star Weekend.
Okay.
They ran that car. 1997, I want to say. No, 97 was the T-Rex car. that's a famous car. I mean, if NASCAR fans know what I'm talking about. So yeah,
all one of them out there. Yeah. Plus I mean, half of me. So
yeah, yeah. No, there's some out there. In Alaska.
Oh yeah.
But the Chrome Illusion car that you're talking, yeah, that was an incredible paint scheme. I think they actually brought that back for another race a couple years later, maybe 2001. He ran a car at Richmond that was yeah, like you said, it changes color. It was beautiful. That was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So so what did you think about the chase this year and the final?
I mean, I'll start right off and say that I think the right guy won. There was a little bit of little butthurt feelings from some people about thinking this year's champion Joey Logano was not deserving of the title because he wasn't one of the big three, as they say. And the big three refers to just these trio of drivers this year that really, by and large, dominated the season. They were up front all week in and week out, winning races. That's Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex Jr. Those three guys really dominated the year. I mean, Kyle Busch and Harvick both won 8 races apiece this year, so out of 36 total, so phenomenal seasons for them. But and then as the year went on, it wound down. It was kind of like, well, you know, assuming the big three make it into the final four championship race, that you know, who's going to be that fourth driver, you know, to disrupt them? And it ended up being Logano, and he did it in a spectacular fashion. He knocked Truex out of the way at Martinsville on the final. I'm sure did you hear about that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was a good move. It was. I thought. I mean,
beautiful.
I think you know maybe yeah. It was a classic NASCAR racing, quintessential racing, as they might say. It was you know the bump and run on the final lap at Martinsville. You know, I think a lot of it. You know, a lot. I think it seemed to me that maybe about 3/4 of NASCAR Nation, if you want, kind of, you know, they enjoyed that move, but you know, of course, there were the Truex fans that did not enjoy. They called, you know, they say he's a dirty racer, and but you know, I think there's a clear line between wrecking a guy to win and doing it cleanly. You know, just giving him the chrome horn, as they say, you know, getting down in the corner and just moving him. He didn't wreck him; he just moved him, and that victory at Martinsville clinched Logano's spot in the final, in the championship final. So that I mean, if he hadn't done that, you know, he probably would not have even had a chance to win it. And then and when it came down to Homestead, Miami, the final race, you know, he just he had a 15 lap run to the finish to win it, and he just powered his. I mean, he had the perfect car for that run to the finish. Just you know. Took the lead around Martin Truex with like 12 to go and couldn't be caught. And a lot of butthurt fans maybe thinking he's not the right guy. And there's, you know, and I was experiencing a similar feeling a couple of years ago when Jimmy Johnson won his seventh title, which tied him for the all-time record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jimmy Johnson won that title in 2016. And I tried to enjoy it as much as I could because I knew it was a historic moment, but it was hard to enjoy that because it was such an off year for Jimmy and, you know, that 48 team. And I was sitting there. I just couldn't believe that they had won a championship and he just basically fluked his way or lucked his way into a couple wins and he really got hot at the right time. I don't know. It was hard for me to take.
Yeah. You know, a lot of fans were saying similar things about Jeff Gordon back in the day, too.
Back in the day. But those were full-season championships.
That's true.
You had to earn points each and every week. It wasn't like the points were not reset. There was no winner-take-all format like they have now. So that's my argument.
No, that's legit.
He lost the 96 title. He won 10 races that year. And the guy who did win the title, who beat him, won 2 races. So And that's really kind of – that's one of those years that helped bring about that chase format, the champ, you know, the where they reset the points. So,
right. Have you ever raced anything? Snow machines, no, motorcycles, bicycles?
I mean, bicycles, maybe.
Okay.
No, I mean, yeah, nothing with a motor. I've never been – I mean, I would love maybe to get out and try something maybe at Twin City Raceway. I know in the summer that'd be fun to get out there and just do like a little – run a little Legends car or something. Maybe I could get a hook up there,
dude.
Let's do it.
Let's make it a media event.
There we go.
Yeah. We'll get the talk woman from KSRM, whatever her name is, in the news department there,
and talk to maybe the Kenai Racing Lions, and we could say and get some coverage out there. Me running a little race.
Yeah. No, you and me racing each other.
Oh, you and me.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. We'll see who's got the elbows in the corners.
Joey and Jay.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Man, what do you think, Jeff?
I don't think you'd make the first corner.
I think I would pick Jay.
Oh.
Right on.
Come on.
I used to actually race things with engines in them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I know a little bit about it.
You race things like what?
I raced motorcycles, motocross when I was a teenager, and I road raced in my 20s.
Oh, nice.
When I lived in Seattle, Seattle International Raceway.
Oh, I know that place. Actually, my dad used to work when we lived in Seattle, and he worked for a car dealership, and one time ran some test laps around that race. Is that the drag strip, or is that a...
It's both.
It's actually a road course.
Yeah, the big front straight is the drag strip.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's the same one. It must be. So.
Yeah. They had to, if they had drags on Saturday, they would have to reroute the road course through the pit adjacent area because of all the rubber. It was laid down right there.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Because the beginning of the drag strip was right out of a high-speed left-hand sweeper, and then you sharp right.
Mm.
And so they realized, well, we just need to let them run a little further before we turn them
down
the straightaway.
For sure.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
I bet.
You haven't lived till you've fallen off of something at 90 miles an hour.
I caught a documentary on TV just this last weekend about the Isle of Man DT.
Oh, yeah.
That's an incredible race.
That's insane. Those people are just crazy.
If you ever see an onboard, you know, if they have like a GoPro on the bike or something like that, you ever see an onboard, you just watch and like, like you're about to lose your lunch because I can't believe they're just hurtling down this country road essentially. With no barriers, just houses, brick walls.
I know.
Trees going by them at like 200 miles per hour.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you know, people look at me funny when I talk about racing, but, you know, on a racetrack, a good racetrack, there's nothing to hit. You fall down and you just slide till you come to a stop. But Isle of Man, you are literally, it's like racing around Kodiak Island.
Yeah,
200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know, with cliffs and rocks and all of the stone walls. You know, they have stone walls covering, you know, lining every road, and it
takes a special kind of human to do that sort of thing.
Yeah,
not to this degree of craziness, but I also think of the Pikes Peak race.
Oh yeah,
they have that every year, and that's a mountain climb race that they have up the road that goes to the top of Pikes Peak, and like I said, it's not visually as stimulating as like say watching an Isle of Man racer hurtle down those country roads at 200 miles an hour. But there's still areas of that course where you're going around a switchback, because that's a lot of the road. It obviously goes up the mountain, and there's just a little tiny barrier, if there is a barrier at all, holding it. I mean,
yeah,
it's scary.
I was watching, do you know this guy named Jim Khanna? He does automobile stunt videos.
Okay.
And that's kind of his job. And he drives around doing stunts. And one of them was he took his supercharged Mustang to Pikes Peak. And he's really big in the drifting community.
Okay.
So, you know, so he's taking this thing and he's going up. And they have this one corner and it's up near the top. And this big decreasing radius left-hander. And there's no guardrail on this one. And so they try after try of him trying to get his rear tires off the pavement onto the gravel, you know, and at high speed, you know, he's drifting around. And they showed video of the Audi. Can't remember what model it was, but an Audi that crashed on that corner about 3 years earlier. And he just comes around this corner, and they have the video from inside the car first. This guy coming around a corner, and it gets sharper and sharper as he's going around, and obviously he mistook the corner for another one, and he just drives just straight off the edge. And you could hear him go, O-S.
Yeah.
H. And then they switched to the all the other cameras, and he tumbled 137 times, but walked away.
Yeah. Oh, wow. My God. Those cars, I mean, the car holds you.
Yeah. Yeah. Electric cars. I think an electric car owns a record now.
Is that right? The record was just broken this most recent time, this year.
By an electric car, right?
Yeah.
Or did I?
Yeah, that's right. It was an electric car. Yeah. And that could be an advantage in that particular race because they don't, you know, it's not a, it the high altitude, the thin air does not affect the engine. Because it's a battery, it's an electric car, you know. Yeah, it was a. I know the name of the driver who. I'm trying to think of what he was driving, what the actual car was. It was. It was not an Audi. It was.
Chevy Bolt.
No, it was not that. I can't. I'm just blanking on what the car was. I'm sorry, but yeah, that was the record was broken. He did it pretty nicely too.
Yeah. And Polaris, who made Victory motorcycles, set the motorcycle record like 3 years ago with an electric bike. Then they stopped making motorcycles.
Why?
Well, they're concentrating on Indian. Polaris also owns Indian motorcycles.
Oh, okay.
So.
I'm not sure. I'm more of a four-wheel variety of race fan.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you this link to this Gymkhana guy. Okay. He's got a whole series of videos. If you like drifting at all, you'll like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So, Jeff, I understand your brother's going to call in. Should I give him the number?
I'm not sure. I mean, he's a busy lawyer, so you never know.
907-283-8414 if you'd like to call in. You don't have to be Jeff's brother, but you'll go right on the air if you are. So. Actually, we'll put everybody right on the air. Baseball? You guys want to, or football? NFL or MLB?
We got some house cleaning to do with baseball, I think.
Okay. Go for it, Mr. Dewey? Brewer.
What happened? I don't remember what happened.
Okay.
It's kind of a hazy blur.
Jay, I know that...
Did the Mets play the Brewers? Or, I mean, the Cubs play the Brewers at some point?
I think I was blacked out at one point there.
Yeah.
I've got a theory for Jay. I mean, I know he's a real level-headed guy. He's also a Cubs fan. So, you know, I've got this theory. I'd like to see if Jay thinks it bears out. But I think, like a lot of Cubs fans, Jay is wondering kind of what happened there at the end of the season, right? And that's kind of been keeping you up at night a little bit. You know, you guys were having this great season. You're in first place. You're like, what went wrong? Well, this morning I've kind of got a theory that I'd like to present for you and see if you think it bears out.
Okay.
Basically, like a month ago in the season, I mean, the Brewers had kind of been, you know, two and a half, three games behind the whole time. And I'm just kind of sitting there. I don't know if most people know this, but I'm a Brewers fan. I'm born and raised in Wisconsin. So I've also had the opportunity to watch Cubs fans a lot over the years. And with about, you know, 3 weeks left in the season, the sidekick here, Joey Klucka, says, and I think this will shock you as a lifetime Cubs fan, he says, "I'm not worried about the National League. We're getting to the World Series. I'm just worried about the American League." And I'm just sitting here like, I'm a typical Brewers fan.
Fake news. Totally fake news.
I'm a typical Brewers fan. I'm like, not going to say anything. I'm like, I'll let them roll with that. Because, you know, like I'm thinking the Brewers are only like 2.5, 3 games out of first place at this time. This isn't time to like start, you know, counting the bales in the barn or whatever. Right. But this guy has done that. And so I'm just like not saying anything. I'm letting him roll with it. But I'm thinking like, this guy just cursed his team.
Oh, dude.
I mean, come on. Like,
don't put that on me.
You know the history of the Cubs, right?
Yeah. The curse, I mean, it's broken. It's old news.
I mean, I think you put it, at least this year, you put another curse on them. I mean, the Cubs fans.
I'm the new Billy Sionis. I'm the new Billy Goat.
I grew up watching Cubs fans, right? They grew up, the 1930s, Wrigley owned the team, right? and he decided, I want to package this team so the fans come no matter what. So he designed those really cool uniforms, because Wrigley was like Wrigley's spearmint chewing gum, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Where, you know, that gum is basically relied on marketing as opposed to the gum for a number of years. So he's like, I can do this with a baseball team. So that was in the 1930s. That's when they grew like ivy on the wall. That's when they started flying the W. That's when they started wanting to get on radio and TV and encouraging the announcers to say, you know, this is a sunny, great Wrigley Field. They wanted people to go to the world's largest outdoor beer garden. They didn't want people to care about whether the team was winning or losing. So that kind of that was kind of injected.
You still see that today, kind of, in some teams.
Kind of, but that was like injected in the Cubs' DNA, right? The Cubs fans' DNA. They're always like, "We're here to have fun," you know, the lovable losers.
Is there
thing.
A game going on?
Yeah,
yeah. So like, but that was the Cubs fans that I grew up and knew, and I think there was always a little dissonance with these Cubs fans, right? Because really, everyone cares about winning. But they really couldn't say it, you know, and I think this would, like, show up in, like, these bitter things they had, like, with the Billy Goat. At one point, they booed Bob Uecker during the seventh inning stretch. I mean, you kind of got to have a little something going on there if you're booing Bob Uecker during the seventh inning stretch. But they were, and the Bartman thing is another classic example. But they were kind of, so they're always kind of tortured in this regard, but they had this thing where they had to outwardly say, they weren't like totally concerned with winning, and they never expected any winning, right? But right. I think there's been this weird thing that's happened since they won the World Series, which is exemplified by what he said, this weird confidence that is totally like un-Cub-like.
It's a new era.
I can just imagine. Era, I mean, I'm sure maybe Joey doesn't know this name, but maybe Jay does. Mike Royko, the famous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah,
Royko. Yeah, I mean,
the famous quiz.
The famous columnist. Like, he would have a field day with this. Like, what are Cubs fans doing, like, assuming when they're only up by, like, 2.5 or 3 games?
Right.
That they're going to be, they don't even have to worry about the National League, that they're just worried about the American League.
Yeah.
So I think it's not only Joey, but this new strain in Cubdom where you're assuming these victories, I think is very, very like unseemly part of Cubs fans. It's kind of come to the fore, and I think that you guys were punished for it.
You know,
last season
that could very well be a thing. I personally found it difficult to celebrate the Cubs' victory because I didn't want to seem like I was, you know, jinxing them for the future. We won the World Series. Hey, that's really great. What about next year?
Yeah, no. So you're kind of agreeing with me, huh?
Yeah. No, I think it's absolutely a thing. The I'm surprised it comes from a lifelong Cub fan, though. The bandwagoners, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. I was feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
You know what? I can't see a Cubs fan. Like, I can't see, like, imagine that happening 5 years ago.
Oh yeah,
never would have happened. And I mean, something disturbing for Cubs fans is if you look on the whiteboard right now in our sports office, he already has written Chicago Cubs 2019 Central Division Champions. So it's still going on.
That could be.
And,
did you...
as a Brewers fan, I think that basically we basically don't have starting pitching, right? Nope. I think that's basically going to be exposed next year. We're probably not even going to go .500. That's the way I think. Like, that's the way a lot of sports fans think. But somehow Cubs fans win this one World Series in, like, 108 years. And now they don't even got to worry about the National League anymore.
You can't get excited for your team. You know, they won the World Series. You celebrate. It's the one chance in 108 years you have to celebrate.
Yeah, think of how many millions of people have died and not being able to celebrate.
Yeah.
I think that was changing the subject. I said nothing about celebrating. I said something about assuming 2 years later, 3 years later, that your team has gone to the World Series, like, has this automatic pass.
Yeah.
This is a team that it wasn't to the World Series in 72 years? 72 years?
It was 71. But yeah, it's
this is his house cleaning, baseball house cleaning.
I know. He's getting his
giving it
he's
to
getting
us.
His punches in.
I read somewhere that
you feel confident with the kind of team you have, the talent that they have.
Before they won that World Series, the last one they won was like early 1900s, and at that point, like, heroin was legal over the counter. And all of a sudden you win one, and you're like, you think you've got this, like, rose-petaled entrance into the next couple World Series.
You know what America needs is cocaine in the Coca-Cola again. I think.
Put the Coke back in Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Did you see the story this morning on ESPN? Joe Madden here is 64 years old, and his off-season book is Managing Millennials for Dummies.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
I saw that headline. I didn't read what it was.
Yeah, apparently he got got to thinking that he wasn't really communicating with the younger people on his team down the stretch.
That's interesting because he's kind of like this, like, he's kind of like this young, not, he has the spirit. I've always thought he's an older guy, but he has like a young, what's the word I'm looking for? He's just got this young spirit. Like, he's just kind of like a guru of baseball. It's interesting because Chili Davis was just fired, their hitting coach, not just fired, but like a month ago, just fired or so.
And their bench coach just got hired by the Phillies, I think.
The Orioles.
Orioles, rather.
Brandon Hyde.
Right.
I mean, Madden's problem is he just can't get the millennials interested in fine wine. And I mean, I kind of like the Brewers in this regard because Council, he actually looks like a millennial. He looks like he's like 12 years old. So
looks like he can get out there and pinch hit.
Advantage Brewers. He could get out there and pinch hit.
That's true. There's no law against a manager taking the field.
Yeah. No player manager.
It. Yeah.
But it's interesting though that he's what was the story? Was Madden like? Was there like pictures that surfaced of him reading that or something?
In an effort to connect better with his players after a disappointing finish the last season, 64-year-old Chicago Cubs manager Joe Madden's winter reading this offseason includes a book called Managing Millennials for Dummies.
So he just told the media that.
The made-up-sounding title is anything but. As former Cubs hitting coach Chili Davis, along with the Cubs front office, have intimated, there were times when it was difficult to communicate with the team's younger players.
I think Chili Davis was—he's an old school hitting coach.
Yeah,
and there's like I said before, they released him. There's talk about him not connecting to some of the younger guys.
Yeah, he was with the A's, wasn't he, back in the day, Chili Davis?
I think I like my theory better as to why the Cubs failed than the fact that Joe Madden didn't read a book called "Managing Millennials for Dummies."
Yeah, we'll see how that holds up for this upcoming season.
Yeah.
You know what? Have we met since I took my vacation with my brother to the Lower 48 to see the Cubs?
Maybe it was just
before that. So we made these plans at the end of August, and we were going to fly down to Denver, visit family, and then drive over to Phoenix and watch the Cubs, who were playing the Diamondbacks for 3 games, right? So when we made those plans, the Cubs were 2.5 games ahead. The Rockies and the Dodgers, who we also saw in Denver, were battling for the lead of the West, and so were the Diamondbacks. They were in the mix. By the time we got there, Cubs and the Dodgers were the only two teams that were going to make the playoffs.
Wow.
And the Cubs, of course, they had to go to a playoff to make the playoffs. So
yeah, and then the one-game playoff didn't go so well either.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the Diamondbacks kind of had that crash and burn, and now they reacted by sending former Anchorage Bucks player Paul Goldschmidt to the St. Louis Cardinals, making the Central Division even tougher. But he's already put the whiteboard thing on the board, so I guess the Cubs are winning it no matter what. I mean...
we'll see. The Brewers, you know, they got to play Goldschmidt, too. They got to pitch to him, too, you know.
19 times a year. I'm fully aware. I said I don't think the Brewers are going to finish 500.
Yeah. Have you guys been following the winter meetings at all? Your teams make any moves?
I haven't been following it that close, but I don't think the team has made any moves.
No.
It's been, Goldschmidt, Andrew McCutchen just went to the Phillies.
Saw that. Late last night.
About 6 months ago, the Cubs were the huge favorites to land Bryce Harper. But now there's and that could be fizzling now. I mean, the Cubs, they don't have a lot of, they can't offer him as much as he's asking for. So.
Yeah, I don't hear any rumors at all about Cubs and Harper anymore.
Yeah.
Hardly at all.
They've been quieted.
Yeah. Though I keep hearing the Yankees attached to him, which would be horrible for life as we know it.
Yeah.
And the universe.
Yankees get everything.
But you know why he's not going there? His beard. They still don't allow facial hair on the Yankees. Yeah.
I actually read a story that the Yankees weren't going to get him, that they finally were going to restrain themselves on just buying these good players.
I don't know if there's any right now. I can't think of who's the favorite to land Bryce Harper. I can't think of who's the biggest team right now who's talked about.
I mean, what I've read about Bryce Harper is, as you know, he was like a young prodigy, and he like did these things where he could like graduate from high school early so he could enter the MLB draft early. And it's basically like his lifelong plan to hit unrestricted free agency as young as possible and then, you know, make a ton of money. So I think the team that's the favorite is a team that's going to, I mean, this has been his lifelong plan. So I think the team that is the favorite is a team that's going to pay him the most.
Dodgers?
Dodgers?
Because if they're getting rid of Manny Machado?
Yeah. I mean,
doesn't
he
hustle.
Definitely might be a thing. Yeah.
Johnny will not hustle? I can't believe he came out and said that.
I know, right? Yeah, but then the next day, he did hustle out a grounder to first and beat it, though, the day after he said that.
Yeah, he hustled enough to hit the first baseman's leg.
Yeah.
Try to break his ankle.
Jeez.
That was a hustle play.
Yeah, he's kind of an ass. I mean, he really is. He's why? What does it do with players named Manny and being asses?
Manny.
I didn't even know you could say that word on public radio.
Oh, as long as you don't add hole.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, because an ass is just a donkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So. I don't even think I'm going to tread in those areas.
No, you shouldn't. It's best for professionals who know how to restrain themselves. But, you know who needs him the most, Harper, is Seattle. Seattle needs a center fielder, and they need somebody who can hit the ball.
Are they going to build around him? They don't got anybody. They need somebody to build around.
It's better than trying to have built around Robinson Cano.
Robinson Cano is what? Where is he? Where is he now? He went to the
Mets.
Excuse me, the other New York team. Right?
Yeah, with and they wanted
Paxton
needed
went to
get,
Toronto, right? Not Toronto, but he went to where did he go? I forget.
He went to Philly. No, he went to the Yankees.
Paxton went to the Yankees.
God, yeah,
the Yankees.
I know. Yeah, it's horrible.
I was really excited for a Cubs Yankees World Series this year.
Jeez.
That would have been classic, really. I mean, it would have been a good series. You know what? And I think the Yankees would have brought out something better in the Cubs. Just on the field, I think playing them would have playing in Yankee Stadium. You know.
What about the Red Sox?
That was the point I was going to make earlier about you talking about Cubs fans, you know, being so expectatious after one win in 108 years. No fan on earth is more annoying than the Red Sox fan.
You're talking to me like I'm a Red Sox fan. I'm fine with that.
They have surpassed Yankees fans.
After winning four titles in the last dozen years.
Yeah.
Tell me more about why. I'm interested about why.
Well, they're just insufferable. You know, they don't have the humility that Cubs fans do.
Maybe they once did, but it's gone now.
Yeah. Yeah, they had humility in 2004, but in 2005, it was gone.
The thing that I've always thought about Red Sox fans is that team takes place in the, you know, like, you've been to Fenway Park, right?
No, I've never been to Boston.
On your ballpark tour, you did not make it to Fenway Park.
Furthest east I got was Chicago.
Well, where that park is, it's like in the midst of all these great American universities, right? And it's in the midst of like probably the America's most highbrow sports writing tradition. So with Boston, like everything is like related to Greek play, right? Like when they win or they lose, there's like some poem by like Longfellow they bring up. So, and they're still kind of doing that. I've never thought of them as like Cubs are like the Cubs fans are these happy losers, right? Like no matter what, you're going out afterward in Wrigleyville. Everyone there is drunk and beautiful. It's a great time. That ballpark just like throbs with like energy no matter what's going on. But they're happy. They're happy losing, or so they say. I don't really think they are, but that's kind of their vibe. But like Red Sox fans, I think have always kind of raised baseball to like this Greek tragedy thing. And I still think they're kind of doing that. You know, when I read the Sports Illustrated article about the Red Sox winning the World Series, there was still like a bunch of references to like old poems and stuff like that. So I think they've taken their new station and they've still kind of put it in that same frame. And that's what I'm saying about the Cubs fans. Like, how do you take, because the Cubs are no longer this perfectly packaged team that doesn't care about winning. Theo Epstein is as good as they come. So how does Cub Nation make this transition? They're no longer like these happy losers.
The lovable losers.
Yeah, they're no longer that. What are you guys now? You've totally lost your identity. I don't know how you. And then all of a sudden you start flailing around. You say we're going to the World Series no matter what. I don't know if you guys could survive this World Series.
It's a growing process.
The narrative has changed now. I mean they've won the World Series. There's no Billy Goat curse. There's no lovable losers. You're just the team now. You're just a winning team.
They even gave Bartman a team ring.
But
they
wanted him
to show up and he didn't.
This is something that you guys dealt with for over 100 years, so that's like not only that's like your dad, your grandfather, the father before him.
I know.
Like my aunt and uncle are like Cubs fans, and so my like cousins, you know, that this whole thing. I've talked to them over a number of years, every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, and they have this. I don't know how you adjust to the new station in life.
I was thinking about that. I was pondering that, like, before they won the World Series, but that year, the 2016 season, you know, they won 103 games, and as they're making their way through the postseason, I was thinking about, man, I would love them to see them win this championship, but at the same time, like, what's gonna, like, that's, this is it, like, this is the end of that identity. You gotta figure out what you are now.
You know what's funny was, you remember Game 7, and everything was looking bleak, and there's the rain delay. You know, me and my brother are on the phone. He's in Dillingham. You know, we're watching the game, and it's like, well, classic Cub fashion. Yeah. It's like, you know, we got next year, man.
They gave up that 2-run homer.
Yeah, we got next year. Yeah. It'll be fine. You know, I'll drink the champagne anyway. But you know,
yeah, and then they pull it out. Former Clarion reporter Phil Hermanek, his thing he always said was, "Next year is the year of the Cubs." No matter what, that's what he said.
Yeah. We have 10 minutes to talk NFL if you'd like.
Oh, I would like.
Yeah. What's the deal with Dale Bagley? He is just clobbering you guys in the pigskin pick-em. Like 2 games a week better than everybody else.
Is he really?
Just about if you add him up.
I haven't been even really watching. I'm sorry.
Been paying attention. No,
I wonder why.
The problem with NFL picks is, having done it for so many years now, there's like a weird regression to the mean thing. Like, a couple years ago, I had like an incredible season, and you know, I would go around telling everyone my secrets. I do this, I do that, and I felt almost like a Cubs fan. I felt invincible. But then, like this year, I started out and like in all my pick'em leagues, I was like at the bottom of the, you know, and I was doing everything that I had done before. So there was that book, the Black Swan book by Nicholas Haseeb Taleb. Are you familiar with that author?
Yeah. I don't think I've read it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, and it's basically like came out in the wake of the financial crash. And it's like, if you run like these probabilities, like, you know, like you could be doing well for like 3 or 4 years, but you run it out for like 1,000 years. And like that would just be like that happened to be the 3 or 4 years that you're doing well, but you're really just a 50-50 guy, right? And I think that's kind of what goes on with NFL picks. Or his point was like, we have these titans of the financial industry and we're like, how could they have failed us in the crash? And he's like, basically, like, these were people who just like gotten lucky. They really had no like knowledge of like how the financial system was working. And then when it came time to really need some knowledge, they didn't, and our economy crashed. And I think there's a kind of an aspect of like football pick'em to that, where you focus in on like 1 year and you know, you say you think you got it all figured out, but really you're just kind of part of this big probability thing and you just happen to be having your year.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that might partially explain the appeal of fantasy sports, you know, or daily fantasy sports even, where, you don't have to rely on your one team, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or you don't have to rely on you being able to pick whole teams. Like, I want to pick this guy who's a good runner. You know, I got him on my fantasy team.
Like, you're not stuck with one team.
Yeah.
Yeah, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
But to kind of tie this back to the Cubs briefly.
Oh, Lord. Come on.
This is where this thing came, where, like, You crapped on us enough today.
Come on. These economists
looked at, like, the Cubs, and they're like, no, seriously, like, because they weren't even competitive. Like, they didn't make the World Series for, what was it, 71 years? And they were trying to figure out, like, why this had happened. And they came back to this Wrigley thing, and they're like, this team was never packaged to win. This team was packaged to make people happy. Like, that's a theory that actual, like, economists came up with. Because, because you'd think if, like, if you had 32 teams or whatever it is in MLB, and they each kind of supposedly had, like, an equal chance at, like, making the World Series, you'd think it would have happened in, like, 71, 72 years. You'd think they would have won one in, like, 108. So they're like, what was screwing this up that, like, they weren't competing? And then they looked really closely at the franchise, and they're like, they didn't care about winning. They cared about, like, looking good.
Well, don't forget that before 1969, too, all you had to do was finish first and you were in the World Series.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, there might have been only 20 teams back then. But still, that meant you had to beat 10 other teams straight up that year.
In a 162 game series.
Yeah.
And the other thing they look closely at is they're like, it wasn't like they were even close. You know, like, so a lot of these long-suffering franchises, like the Red Sox, had just this history of, like, getting so close and failing, and then they wrote about it with Longfellow or whatever.
Yeah, I think Cubs threatened twice in 70-some years.
What was going on? And that's what they came up with.
1969 was that epic collapse, but other than that, you know, there was a 39-year stretch they did not make it to the postseason. It was from 1945 to 84.
Yeah. Of course, remember, for most of that, you had to finish first in the National League.
Yeah.
Not just, they had no division. You had to finish first in the National League.
But even like the Brewers, who are like this small, struggling small market franchise, you know, have made it to the playoffs a couple of times in the last 10 years. And
the Twins, too.
Yeah. So some of these, or the Royals, for instance. So they were like, and the Cubs, who should have this big market advantage, who were like WGN, like everyone's a Cubs fan, right?
Right.
How did this organization not...
Well, you know, I think it was the Tribune Company owned it for like a big chunk of the last 50, 70 years or whatever. They didn't put any money into it. I mean, you see pictures of Wrigley Field, you know, games. You see footage from games in the 70s, 80s and stuff. There's like litter blowing across the field, just like every ballpark in the nation. There was like plastic bags, people throwing cans on the field and...
But interestingly, what they looked at is as these teams lost, they looked at like their attendance, and I guess the Cubs were like, there was like no correlation. Like they were unique as a franchise in that the team could lose a ton, have a bad season, and they would still like have great attendance.
Oh yeah. They would always get 3 million.
You can't say that about pretty much, you know, as much as everyone likes to say I'm a dyed in the wool Packers fan or whatever. Like, they will stop following the team if the team is losing. Like, Cubs fans, they would still show up. So what incentive did they have to ever be
good? They had none. But, like, you know, the Oakland A's, when they get bad, nobody shows up.
Exactly. You know? California sports teams, like, if you're not good, no one's showing up.
Have you seen the designs for the new Oakland Stadium?
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah.
The new one for the Golden State Warriors?
No. Baseball diamond.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's going to be in Oakland. They stayed on their side of the bay. They didn't go down to Cupertino or anything.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's...
That wouldn't be happening if the Raiders weren't leaving town, would it?
You know, I don't know. They're probably trying real hard to make sure the A's don't go somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know where they'd go. But it's got no outfield stands. It's just this giant billboard, and both right and left field come in, and then it sort of disappears at center field.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
What's the rationale behind that?
Oh, they're just wanting to make it pretty. Oh, and they know that they can't fill a stadium full of, you know, 70,000 people, so it's probably 50-some thousand.
I mean, if they're not going to have people out there, they should have something out there so when a home run is hit, something happens.
Oh, yeah.
Miami has that, like a little something out there.
They're doing away with that. They're taking it out this season.
Yeah, they do. I know that. But
Which is
Brewers
good.
Have the guy that goes down the slide.
The guy, Bernie Brewer.
The guy.
Is that his name? Bernie Brewer? Yeah.
Bernie Brewer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like watching baseball in Milwaukee when I was there.
It's a fun time.
Yeah. Well, we're almost out of time. We're not quite out of time. We have like 3 minutes more of talking. It's really the most awkward time of a talk show. It's like, what else is there? We only have 3 minutes to cover it.
Did you see Sunday night, Bears and Rams?
Coming up or last
week? No, this last.
I didn't see it, no.
Bears put on a defensive clinic.
Did they?
Shades of 1985.
Wow. Yeah. Did they win?
They won.
Holy cow. They
beat the 11-1 Rams. This is a Rams team that had been averaging 35 points per game this year, and they held them to 6 points.
Man. You know,
two
I was
field
listening,
goals, that's it.
I found out that my Alexa player, my Amazon Echo thing, all I have to do is tell it to play ESPN Radio, and I've got ESPN Radio.
Boom, right there.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's super awesome, really. Please talk more about NFL for 2 more minutes.
I mean, basically...
Packers suck.
Jeez.
What is the deal with the Packers? They let their manager go first time in mid-season ever.
Yeah, their head coach. I mean, I think that they're... You know, obviously, it's hard to say from afar what's going on, but there clearly seemed to be some tension between Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. Aaron Rodgers, the kind of almost at this point legendary quarterback, and Mike McCarthy, who, you know, been there for, I think, 13 seasons and won him a Super Bowl. And it's kind of hard to get rid of Aaron Rodgers. So they got rid of Mike McCarthy. I mean, the team all season just did not have good body language. You know, you'd watch the Brewers, they would have great body language, they would enjoy being around each other. Rodgers always has this pained look on his face, like he can't believe what McCarthy is doing to him, that he has to deign to run these, like, simple plays.
You know what? It's Danica Patrick whispering in his ear.
I know, right? It's a
plague. Do you really think McCarthy wants to?
I think Danica Patrick is like a plant by the Chicago Bears. She grew up in Chicago.
She's a Cubs fan, yeah.
Yeah. So. She was done driving, and she's like, well, I don't really got anything else to do. What can I do? And
what
it's
else
like,
can I ruin?
You know, I'll ruin the Green Bay Packers. I mean, she's actually quite talented. I've seen her do, like, handstands and stuff, and she can walk on
her
hands.
Like, a fitness business, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, yoga stuff. And
I think that's why she jives with Aaron Rodgers. She's got a winery as well.
Really?
So, yeah. I forget the name of it. I'm sorry, but it's something.
Back in the day, the Bears organization did give the Packers some financial help to keep them afloat, so I've never been one to hate the Bears, and I like seeing this brand of defensive football played. So I'm fine with the Bears doing well, but I still think I'd like to see the Packers beat them this weekend. But
and I was gonna say, as for the Bears, you can't be more motivated this weekend at home at Soldier Field, playing your longtime rival, the Green Bay Packers, with a chance to clinch the division. And then after what the Packers did to them in Week 1. Were they? I don't know if you remember that game. Week 1 of the season, the Bears were dominating that game at Lambeau, up 20-0, and they collapsed in the fourth quarter because, you know, Aaron Rodgers had his usual miraculous comeback, number 12.
Man. How many Super Bowls has Aaron Rodgers been to? One.
One,
right?
Yeah. One.
And he won it.
He's one for one, yeah.
Yeah. That is a failing of the head coach.
I mean, he's had Favre and Rodgers his whole coaching career, two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and yeah. There's basically one Super Bowl to show for it. That's not good. And then there was obvious failings, like that NFC Championship game in Seattle, where how do you let Seattle come back there? Like, kudos to Seattle, but I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Before we go off the air, I just remembered one local thing I want to mention just real quick is. The Nikiski girls volleyball team won state this year, so congrats to them.
Hey, yeah, congrats to them.
Got to give a shout-out to them.
And that's all the time we have for the Kenai Conversation today. Thank you to the men with notepads from the Clarion, Joey Klecka and Jeff Helminiak.